So we're at the beginning of a new year, where I think it's a time where we naturally look ahead, make plans. So I think a fitting subject for us to look at tonight is the topic of hope. Hope is a word which captures this idea of looking forward when there's something good ahead that transforms my present as I wait for it with expectancy. That's the Bible's version of hope anyway, a certain hope. You could see it as a light at the end of the tunnel that keeps me going now, even though all is dark around me. And I think we'd all agree that hope is vital. It's what gets us up in the morning. If you've got no hope, what drives you to get up? What drives you to live another day? So hope is absolutely vital. And what I want to show tonight is there is real hope available. Not the I hope so. We're talking real hope. But it's only the Christian that has it. That's what I want to try and show tonight, that only the Christian has true hope in the sense that I'm describing. And to show that, because I know it's a bold claim, people would be angry if I said this on the high street. To show that tonight, I want us to look at a man in the Old Testament, which we read earlier, the book of Habakkuk. He's a prophet. It's a unique little book. It's three chapters. It's unique in the sense that it's not so much about his prophecies spoken to other people. If you read the book, it's actually him dialoguing with God. It's very personal. The focus is very much on Habakkuk. So that's what we're looking at. And in chapter 3, this hope that I've been talking about bursts out of him. I would say it's probably one of the clearest pictures of the Christian hope in the whole of the scriptures, which I hope we'll see by the end. So tonight we're looking at Habakkuk's hope. And three things to say about Habakkuk's hope. Firstly, it's a hope that's greatly needed. He needed it. We need it. Look at Habakkuk. Look at what he says in verse 16. Verse 16 of chapter 3. I hear and my body trembles. My lips quiver at the sound. Rottenness enters into my bones. My legs tremble beneath me. Can you imagine what he's feeling in that moment? He's trying to capture something of what he's feeling. He's struggling for words to describe it, but his whole body is trembling. Rottenness enters his bones. Bones is your strength. I've got no strength. My legs are trembling. He's that afraid. He's that scared. It's dramatic. Why is he feeling that? Well, in the rest of the chapter and before, you find out. God has shown him things that are ahead that he absolutely dreads. There's something in the future that he is dreading. And it was bad enough in his present day. When you open up the book of Habakkuk, the first chapter, he's complaining about his present day. He's saying to God, what's happened to Israel? What's happened to Jerusalem? There's evil everywhere. There's injustice. There's violence. What are you doing, God? Have you asked that maybe as you look around at England, London, St. Margaret's, I don't know, Hounslow. I'm not going to start calling out name places of London. But on a serious note, the present was bad enough. But what God tells him, God says, don't worry, I am doing something. That's God's answer. But God's answer is even worse for Habakkuk. Because God's saying, what I'm going to do is I'm going to send a foreign nation, an empire, that are worse than Israel. They don't know me. They worship idols. They're terrible, but they're going to come and destroy your city, your wonderful place, and your people are going to be dragged away. That's what I'm doing. That's how I'm going to judge your people. That's how I'm going to sort your problem. So it's even worse. It's the worst case scenario. Enemies come in and destroy everything. The Babylonian invasion was one of the lowest points in Israel's history. But God says, don't worry. It's not the end. They're going to be judged too. But Habakkuk, in verse 16, this is all too much. He can't take it. It's overwhelming for him. And I want to pause here with that thought in mind and ask, can you relate to this in any way? You may not be in Israel. You may not be awaiting a Babylonian invasion. But do you tremble? Are you afraid as you look at your present or as you think about what's ahead? Maybe 2025. Maybe the world, or maybe it's your personal life. Think about our world. Turn on the news. I'm not going to do my normal commentary on our society today. I do that a lot. But the wars, politics, evil, darkness, I don't need to do much commentary here. In fact, it's the number one topic on young people's minds. Where's this world heading? Where's things going? I can't see any good ahead. Look at the politicians that are supposed to be leading this. I can't see any hope. And then there's global warming on top of it for young people that are worried about that. Not that I'm saying that I have any views on that area, so don't quote me there. But let's get back to the point. Maybe personally, as you look at your month ahead, years ahead, or your present circumstance, you are afraid. You're trembling. There's no light at the end of the tunnel for you maybe tonight. Maybe there's no hope for you whatsoever. Are you feeling that? What about when we think about things like death? I have to mention death because death is the killer of all hope. Let's face this reality for a minute. 10 out of 10 people die. Everyone in this room, including me, are going to die. Doesn't that kill every hope that I have? Doesn't death steal everything that I've been presently living for? Death should be a killer of hope. But let me push it further still. I think verse 16 will be closer to our present experience than we realize. When I say present experience, to our future experience than we realize. Everything that Habakkuk is feeling in verse 16, I think it's going to be closer to home for us than we think. What do I mean there? Well, according to the Bible, there is a future ahead that will make everyone tremble. In fact, Jesus says there will be a day ahead where people will be crying out for rocks to fall on them. What day am I talking about? It's a day spoken about a lot in the Bible, the final day when Christ returns to judge this world. I didn't make that up. It's in the scriptures. And why am I mentioning that here? Because I think that Habakkuk chapter 3, did you notice when we were reading it earlier, there was all this poetry. Maybe you were finding it hard to follow about God coming down and there's rays coming from his hands and he's walking through the earth. Now, I'm not going to preach all through that poem. That would take a sermon in itself. But what I can say is, as I read that, Habakkuk is talking about God's work, God intervening in history to judge enemies and save his people. That's what this poetry is all about. But what he's doing is he's giving you images all over the scriptures of when God has done that. So did you notice Midian, verse 7? They were dealt with by God before. There's images of Sinai, when you think of Mount Paran, and Teman. That's the direction of Sinai. What happened with that? That was when Israel were rescued from Egypt, the Exodus. So what I'm trying to say is, in this chapter, there's little glimmers of God's work in the past. And then Habakkuk says, that's what's going to happen to Babylon. But I think the language in this chapter is too big even to talk about Babylon's destruction, because they were destroyed as an empire. What God said did happen. I think as we read this chapter, we are supposed to feel something of God's final judgment. The thing that the Bible's building up to and history's moving towards. That day when God will come and evil will be judged. Actually, let's read it just to get a sense of it, just to show you that this is in the scriptures, because maybe you're sitting there thinking, oh, Judgment Day, it sounds like a film. It sounds like an apocalyptic film. Let me read to you an account. This is in Revelation 20. You don't have to turn to it, but this is what John saw, Apostle John. This is verse 11 of Revelation 20. He says, "Then I saw a great white throne and him who was seated on it. From his presence, earth and sky fled away, and no place was found for them. And I saw the dead, great and small, standing before the throne." That's every person who's ever lived. I don't know if you can get this in your head. "And books were opened. Then another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged by what was written in the books according to what they had done. And the sea gave up the dead who were in it. Death and Hades gave up the dead who were in them. And they were judged, each one of them, according to what they had done. Then death and Hades were thrown into the lake of fire." This is the second death, the lake of fire. And if anyone's name was not found written in the book of life, he was thrown into the lake of fire. Terrifying. I don't know if you can imagine being there on that day, but the Bible says that's going to happen. Habakkuk 3 is a tiny picture of that final event. So we're supposed to be reading Habakkuk 3 feeling like Habakkuk. There's something ahead. It's dread. There's no hope. Do you feel the need for hope? Is that event real for you? Because it's going to happen. There is a day appointed. I'm trying to get you to feel a need for hope here. I don't know if anyone is following. But keep looking. Why I'm trying to get you to feel it is because Habakkuk carries on in verse 16. Look at what he says. After he says, my legs tremble beneath me, he says, yet I will quietly wait for the day of trouble to come upon people who invade us. So that's the second point. Habakkuk's hope is a hope that should utterly shock us. He is saying here, though I'm trembling, though I'm afraid, I know that this is not the end. I know that Babylon, God's enemies, will be destroyed. He's so confident. We should be amazed that he's saying this because at his time of writing, Babylon was the great empire of the world. There was no thought of them ever being destroyed. So he's so convinced. It's giving you an idea of the hope that he has. It's certain. But then he goes on in verse 17 and he takes it to a whole new level. Listen to verse 17. Though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. He's painting the worst picture possible. Now, you might not think that sounds bad. You wouldn't say that would be my worst case scenario. But think about Israel. They were an agricultural society. They depended on these things. We depend on them, but we don't feel it. But they felt it. If there was no fruit, no olive, no fields yielding food, there was no life. This is capturing every aspect of society. This affects clothing, their clothing. This affects their labor, their animals help them in their work. This affects food, obviously, drink, sacrifices. They need to bring sacrifices to God. This affects their worship. Everything gone. Habakkuk's painting a picture of utter desolation. Nothing. No life. But it's deeper still, because these things are symbols in the Bible. So the fruit of the vine is symbolic of joy. Oil in the Bible is symbolic of God's presence, his spirit. Olive oil, obviously. That's where I'm getting that from, in case you're wondering why I'm talking about oil. There's another thing, sitting under the vine and the fig tree. Have you ever heard of that expression? We don't use that today. But in that time of Habakkuk, it was an expression talking about peace, rest, prosperity. So in this verse, Habakkuk is saying, imagine a time where there's no joy, no peace, no rest, constant danger. In fact, only death is awaiting because there's no food. They've got nothing. He's painting the absolute worst case scenario that anyone could have imagined. And can I say as well, sadly, this did actually happen when Babylon invaded. If you read, for example, Lamentations 4, another book in the Old Testament, we read of how people had to eat their children to survive. Can you imagine that? This is the kind of picture that Habakkuk is imagining. He's foreseeing. And the worst part of it all is that this came from the Lord. Their gods, his judgment on them because of their sin and their guilt that had got to a point of no return. Worst case scenario. To make this hit home for us, maybe you're not feeling it. Maybe we can try and fill in the blank ourselves. So maybe you could say, though, verse 17, though, dot, dot, dot. What would you say? Though I'm bankrupt. What would be your worst nightmare? Bankrupt. Lose my job. Homeless. Divorce, betrayed, loved one dies, illness, cancer, deathbed, Maybe imagine your own worst nightmare and fill in that blank, because we need to feel this. Imagine your worst case scenario. What's the worst thing you can imagine happening to you? That's the kind of picture that Habakkuk is painting here and imagining. Worst case. Maybe let's even picture that final judgment I was talking about. That would be the ultimate nightmare. So do you feel it? Well, now with that in mind, pan the camera and look at Habakkuk. He's painted his worst case. What do you think he's going to be doing? On his face, crying out, how could this happen? Weeping, tears. What does he say? Verse 18. Yet I will rejoice. He repeats it again. I will take joy. Do you know the literal translation of those words in the Hebrew? One of them, the first word, jumping for joy in the Lord. Second word, I will spin around in the God of my salvation. This is the picture of someone almost celebrating. I hope I'm not pushing this too far. But that's what the words are translated as. It's almost like he's so happy in the worst case scenario. How can you put the two together? Let's be real. This doesn't sound real. How can this be? How can someone be happy in such a state, in such a scenario? Let's say plainly, we don't know anything of this in our world today. This is alien. Maybe your song, because this is a song, by the way, he's singing. Maybe your song would be if, instead of though, if I got married. Maybe then I'll rejoice. If I had good health for the rest of my life, then I'll jump for joy. If I had family, my dream home, good career. If Spurs win the league, I'll jump for joy then. It's always an if. It's always dependent on something. But with Habakkuk, it's the opposite. Even though the worst happens possible, I will still rejoice. That's the Christian hope. The best we do in our times of trouble in this world is we either distract ourselves, which is partly why I think we can never sit alone in silence. It's always got to be a TV on, or phone screen. I can't reflect on reality. It's too much, so I distract myself. That's one thing we do, or we pretend it's not real. Positive thinking. I've got a sad story, in my case, where I tried positive thinking before I was a Christian, obviously. And I looked in the mirror and I said, Joe, you're strong. You're successful. And if you said it hard enough, it would be true. I lasted 2 seconds. I looked at myself in the mirror and said, no, you're not. That's the kind of thing we do. We can't get our head around what's going on here because it's so alien to our experience. And you might not think this is real. Is this just Habakkuk? Is he just a glass super full person? No. If you look at believers all through the ages, they knew something of this. We've got it in the scriptures. In the book of Acts, Paul and Silas, they're sitting in prison, chained, and they're singing. They're singing in prison. John Payton is my favourite example. I quote him a lot, but I think this is one of the worst case scenarios you could ever face. He's sitting up in a tree. There's cannibals at the bottom waiting to eat him. They were the people that he was trying to reach with the gospel. He's a missionary. And he says it was one of the best nights of his life because he was with the Lord. What about the hymn we sung, It Is Well With My Soul? If you listen to the story behind that hymn, I'll tell you very quickly. The writer of that hymn, Horatio Spafford, first he lost his 4-year-old son. Then there was the Great Chicago Fire, which reduced all his financial security to ashes. So he sends his wife and 4 daughters away to Europe for a rest. They all go on the ship. The ship sinks. He loses his 4 daughters. Only his wife survives. And he writes this hymn in light of that. It is well with my soul. There's something going on here. What does a Christian have that can make them do this? Are they acting? Are they pretending? My claim tonight is it's real. I've witnessed Christians, their world come crash. I've seen it. That a Christian's world coming crashing down, and yet Their hope is intact and they joy in the Lord. I've seen it before my very eyes. Maybe you have. If this is real, and my claim is this is real. If this is real, we must ask, do you know anything of this hope and joy? Do you have anything of this? Can you look ahead like Habakkuk and say, though this happens, though God comes in judgment, I will rejoice, I will hope. Can you take it to its extreme? How often we're crying over spilt milk. I say that to me. If you see some of the things when the tiniest thing goes wrong and I lose it, I'm missing this. G. Campbell Morgan said on this passage, I believe that the one thing the church most sadly lacks today is exuberant, buoyant joy in the Lord God that Habakkuk had. So the point is, do you want this hope? If you either, maybe some of you think, I know something of it, but it's dim. Maybe some of you think, I don't know this at all. I'm not a Christian. I don't know any of this hope. The third and final thing is, it's a hope we really can know. I think that's the point here. Because if we carry on reading, verse 18 to 19, Habakkuk says, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places. He gives us the reason. he tells us the secret. He doesn't leave us in the dark. He doesn't end by saying, yet I will rejoice, and then the book ends. We'd be left, why are you rejoicing? He tells us why. The secret is, firstly, in that word, in. Yet I will rejoice in. His hope is based on something. It's not random. It's not fantasy. It's based on something. His joy is based in something. Here we're talking about faith. We're in the realm of faith. Faith and hope are very closely linked. So he's trusting in something. That's the secret. Now, we all have some sort of faith. When you sit in your parents' car to drive you to school, there's some element of faith in their driving. You get a plane, you sit on a chair. There's always faith exercised in some way, but this, none of our faiths produce this. I think we can agree there. Habakkuk's got something else going on here. What's his faith in? Well, firstly, what is it not in? I think that's important. The point here is his faith is not in anything around him. Everything he's listed in verse 17 and beyond, his faith is not in himself, not in any food or something growing or some person, nothing. And I think that's important to note because we're not talking about rejoicing in tragedy. Habakkuk is not rejoicing in the fact that the fig tree has failed. He's not rejoicing in the bad thing that's happening. That would be weird. I'm not happy when I'm hit or when something goes wrong. We're not talking about that. But that's the very point. The problem with the world's hope is that it's always in something around me. I don't know what yours is. Is there something you're hoping in, trusting in, and that brings you joy? I don't know what it is. But Habakkuk's is not in anything around him, nothing to do with himself. Look where it is. In the Lord. That's where his faith is. God is his hope. God is the source of his joy, and only God is in the Lord. And that tells us, firstly, that God produces joy. This is an amazing truth. Because his trust is in the Lord, he's exuberant with joy. He's jumping for joy, even when everything else fails around him. God makes people happy. He makes Habakkuk so happy that nothing can shake it. So what is it? What is it about God that makes Habakkuk so hopeful, so happy, and trusting his whole life in? Well, Habakkuk gives us four reasons. There could be 10,000 reasons I could give tonight. Habakkuk gives us four reasons in the rest of this passage, and we'll just go through them very quickly, and hopefully there'll be reasons for you to hold on to. So the first reason Habakkuk gives is, he's the Lord. You see it there in capital letters, verse 18? The Lord. That's God's name, Yahweh. That's saying, Habakkuk's saying, I know his name. I know his character. I know God. He's saying, Exodus 33, he knows his scripture. I know God is merciful, gracious. I know his character. He's slow to anger. He's abounding in steadfast love. Yes, even to sinners. He would know the scriptures. How does he know these things? He reads his Bible. So he knows there are sinners like Jacob who received it. He will see, God is so kind to sinners. I'm a sinner. Habakkuk could say things like, God is faithful because he's kept his promises. He could say things like, God is eternal. He hasn't changed. It's all God's character. Do you see the link? Even though all seems against Habakkuk right now, he's saying, I know the Lord. I trust him, and I know he hasn't changed. That's why God's name is so important. He knows the heart of the Lord. He knows that God is good, even if all else around him says otherwise. That's the first thing. Second reason is he's the God of my salvation, he says. That's so important. Habakkuk saying, God has saved me. He's the God of my salvation. I've tasted it. It's mine. What's he saved me from? Death, enemies, everything. Not just past, but future. And you see the logic of this? The same God who's coming in judgment, that's making Habakkuk tremble at the thought of Babylon coming in and everything going wrong, is the same God who's for him. The same God who saved him. So what does he have to fear? Do you see? His worst nightmare's happening, but the same God who's behind it is for him. That's unshakable hope. That means anything that happens to me in this life, if I know God is for me, who can be against me? That's why he's so hopeful, even in the midst of this desolation. There's a third reason. God the Lord is my strength. How strong is God? Is there a limit to God's strength? Surely, if I knew that I had something of God's strength, surely I wouldn't be fazed so much by things that happen. I would be able to get through anything, right? But it's not just that God gives him strength. He says, God is my strength. So Habakkuk's saying, God is with me. He himself is my strength. So anything that crumbles around me, God's with me. He's around me. He's holding me. He's helping me. Do you see the logic again? I can face anything. If this is true, that God is my strength, take anything, do anything. That's why Christians are martyred. They've got this supernatural strength that God's with them. You've seen the secret to this joy and hope. But there's one more thing, fourth reason. He lifts me. What does he say, second part of verse 19? He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places. What's that saying? Well, have you ever seen deer's like climbing on mountains and you think, how do they do it? Watch these documentaries. What's the secret? It's their feet. They can walk easily on these impossible paths that are high and treacherous. They have feet for it. They can do it. Habakkuk's saying, God makes my feet like theirs, so I can tread through anything that looks impossible to the other humans around, but I'm walking. He's helped me. Have you seen Christians walk through impossible situations and you think, how are they doing it? They can say what Habakkuk says, he makes my feet like deer. It's him. But more than that, have you seen deer skipping on the mountains? You're like, what? I'd be like holding on like this, but they're skipping along. That's like Habakkuk. He's skipping through a worst case scenario. He's joyful. But more than that, who dwells on the heights in the Bible? Truly, the highest heights. God. I think this is Habakkuk saying, I'm with God. The worst is happening around me, but yet I'm on the heights with God, above it somehow. I should be in the depths of despair, and I am in the depths in some sense, but at the same time, I'm on the heights. Do you see what's going on here, the picture? Habakkuk is in the middle of the worst scene. He's pictured it. And yet he's surrounded by the Lord, he's saved, and God is with him. So if all else may fail, the Lord hasn't. That is the beauty of all this. And the beauty is Habakkuk hasn't made all of this up. All of this is in the Word. All this stuff he's saying about God. God has said it himself. More than that, Habakkuk hasn't just intellectually believed it and read it and said, right, yep, it says God is strong and he's my strength, so I will believe that. He's experienced it. Did you notice how many times it says my? The Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He's the God of my... He knows this. He's experienced it. Is it starting to make sense? I hope it does. If all of this is true about God, and he will save me from anything, even the worst case scenarios on earth, and he's for me and with me, surely I can take joy even in the worst that happens. I'm not saying it's easy. We'll speak about that later. But surely I can. There's a source of joy. There's a hope that hasn't been taken away no matter what comes in this life. That's the reason, his faith in the Lord. And surely, for those of us here tonight, let's make this personal to us. We have the full revelation, right? We have the Old Testament, New Testament. Surely we can say with Habakkuk tonight, if you know your Bibles, surely we can say, I will rejoice in the Lord. I know his name. That same Lord became a human being, born on earth. I've seen his character in Jesus Christ. I could stand here tonight and try and tell you all the amazing things Jesus did and tell you how wonderful his heart is and how compassionate and loving he is, but we don't have time. But you read the Gospels for yourself and know the character of God, and then you'll trust him for anything, especially knowing that he gave his life for me and took my death, my shame, my hell. He was forsaken. How can I doubt him with any trouble that comes if I truly trust in his heart and character? So surely we can say that. Surely we could say, I will take joy in the God of my salvation. Surely. Jesus means Yahweh saves. The Lord saves. It's in his name. If you look at the cross, you conclude, he will go that far to save me. That far? Lay down his life for me? And then he rises? He's defeated the worst enemy? And he's going to return? If he is my salvation, anything can come. Surely we can say that. Surely we can say the Lord is my strength. He sends his spirit to live inside Christians. I know his power at work in my life. Surely we could say he makes my feet like the deer. Christians walk impossible paths. They have victories over sin that they never thought they would. They're set free from addictions. They somehow make it through betrayal and mockery and anything else. They could be alone and air the whole world against them, but yet they're on these heights and they're just walking along, treading on these impossible heights because God is with them. It's a beautiful picture. The point of all of this is Jesus is our source of all hope and joy. If only we were to trust him. That's the point. Faith in him. This is the secret. Real living faith in the Lord. So for Christians here, maybe we can diagnose ourselves a little bit. Is this why we're so miserable? Is this why I'm so shaky and I flip at anything that goes wrong? Is it a faith issue? Is it because my trust is not in him like it could be? I think this is a call for believers to turn away from everything I've been hoping in and trusting in and place it in him again. Maybe this is your hardest time you've ever been through. This is saying to you that you can find God as your hope in this time, your joy in this time. I'm not saying it's easy. Habakkuk is trembling in verse 16. This is not easy, but there's a determination. I will, he says, I will. This is a call for us to be determined. I will put my faith in him and find my joy in him. And anyone here who is outside of this hope, maybe you, if you're honest with yourself, you have no real hope for the future. I don't know if that's anyone here. You've got no hope in death. You've got no hope of heaven. You've got no hope of the future. If that final day was to come, which it could come today, tomorrow, if Christ was to return, you would have no hope. You would be trembling like verse 16, but you wouldn't be able to say yet. There will be no yet. Just that's it. Tremble. It's over. If that's you, I hope tonight you've seen that the one safe place to put your trust now and forever is in the Lord. That's the only happy, safe place. The only place that will bring joy now and forever. So won't you trust him today? Fall into his arms. That's what trust is. It's a trust in your life, whole life in his hands. That's what faith is. It's in trusting yourself, me. Won't you ask him to be the God of your salvation, to save you from your sins? And please don't stop until you say, you can say, the Lord, the God of my salvation. So as we look to 2025 and beyond, may we all be able to say with Habakkuk, though the fig tree should not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, the produce of the olive fail, and the fields yield no food, and the flock be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will take joy in the God of my salvation. God the Lord is my strength. He makes my feet like the deer's. He makes me tread on my high places.